Cody and Charlie and a few of their friends chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better when you do hear them.
How is everyone doing tonight? Welcome to Two Beers In, a Tipsy Political Roundtable. I am your host, Charlie Todd. My wife, Cody Lindquist, is in Los Angeles being a working actor. So I'm flying solo tonight. I was at the bar across the street. I had two double IPAs across the street, so I am tipsy. Now I'm on my third beer, and we have a fantastic panel tonight. Cody and I, we host this show. We're coming up in almost 4 years. This is our first 10:30 show we've ever done. So thank you guys for coming out late. This is, I think, the latest one we've ever done. We've got a great panel of comedy writers and journalists here tonight, and we're going to talk about the news of the week and drink a couple of beers. So let's welcome our panel, everybody. She is a writer for The Daily Show. Please give it up for X Mayo! X Mayo! A correspondent for Vice News, give it up for Evan McMorris Santoro.
Wow, wow, wow.
She is a field producer for Full Frontal with Samantha Bee and a documentary filmmaker. Give it up for Anna Breton. And he is a writer for The Late Night with Seth Meyers. Please welcome Sal Gentile. All right. Welcome, everybody, on this late Wednesday night here at the UCB Theater. I should also mention that our show is a podcast. Subscribe to our podcast. Give us a rating. Leave a review. Last week, we had a show where we interviewed our state senator, Brad Hoylman. So if you want to hear an hour of very local news, please listen to last week's episode. Not topical, just good local stuff. A lot of good bike lane stuff. I got all my bike lane topics out of me last week, so you guys are going to be spared from me talking about bike lanes this week. Unless it comes up organically, we'll see. I want to start the show talking about the funniest thing that has happened, maybe in the Trump presidency, definitely in news this month, which is Trump taking out a Sharpie and altering a hurricane map. We mentioned this, so we had a live show last week at the Hell's Kitchen Democratic Club, and we mentioned it like happened that day, and I am shocked that this is still in the news a week later. Delighted, because it is the funniest thing that I've seen happen, but maybe the funniest thing Trump's ever done. I want to talk about it and see the panel's opinion on it and understand why it's still in the news. The scariest thing to me about Sharpiegate is that Trump thought he was going to maybe fool us. Like, I totally get that Trump sort of like misspoke or gave some dated information about the hurricane hitting Alabama, but the fact that he thought he could maybe solve the problem by altering a map with a Sharpie and that we would not notice is very funny, but also very, very, very scary. And Sal, I know that you've been doing a deep dive on Sharpie Cave. Can you explain why we are now in like day 8 of this being in the news?
Yes, we've done multiple deep dives on Sharpie Gate already. We are now on. I mean, it's been 2 weeks since the original tweet, or almost, right?
Can anybody name the hurricane that this is about? I mean, the hurricane didn't even hit the United States.
Right.
I mean, let's be real, it hit the Bahamas bad.
Yes.
So
it's now, the hilarious thing is that I think everyone wanted it to go away and to stop. And everyone, you know, probably on all sides. Probably
everyone.
Probably the White House wanted it to go away. Probably the media, to some degree, we certainly wanted it to go away. As we talk about other things, and it's actually gained steam in the past few days because there are now.
It's now a Category 5 topic.
Yes, it is, because there are now multiple very real investigations into what happened behind the scenes about the cover up. Because so. Trump has implicated other parts of the government, strong-arming them into backing up his story. After drawing the Sharpie on the map, then then NOAA issued this unattributed statement saying actually President Trump was correct when he said that Alabama was going to get hit.
So no one signed that press release. It was just
no one signed it.
It was just an immaculate conception press
that's
release.
That's right. It was just appeared out of nowhere. So then meteorologists and actual scientists were justifiably furious about this. And so then NOAA's chief scientist pledged to investigate what happened and how that statement got put out. It was then reported that the chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, and the commerce secretary, Wilbur Ross, had intervened to get people, to force people to disavow the National Weather Service in Birmingham when they said that Alabama was not going to get hit, when they contradicted the president. And then on top of that, just tonight, even though I know this is obvious to everybody, it's still necessary to officially report it out, that according to the anonymous sources and all of the very important investigative reporting that the media is doing, President Trump is the one who himself ordered Mick Mulvaney and Wilbur Ross to tell the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration to disavow their own scientists. And so now a House committee is officially investigating it, an inspector general is officially investigating it, and the NOAA chief scientist is officially investigating it. So there are now three official investigations, by my account, of the president drawing a circle on a fucking map with a Sharpie.
Because he couldn't just say, oh, my bad, I was looking at an old forecast. was the mistake. At one point, it was like, it's going to be windy in Alabama.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there was a forecast at one time, and it was that weird spaghetti forecast that he tweeted a bunch.
Yes.
That maybe it was going to be pretty windy in Alabama.
Yes.
But then, by the time he actually tweeted that it was going to hit Alabama, that was no longer true. It was not going to be windy in Alabama. All he had to do was just be like, yeah, oh, sorry, that was old info.
Just say, sorry, I stopped paying attention after the very first briefing, and I thought, and that's the last thing I remember. And so he couldn't just say that. But you're right. The craziest thing about it, so we know that he's a pathological liar. But the craziest thing is that he thought that holding up the map with the Sharpie circle on it, that everyone would see it and be like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I guess Alabama is going to get hit by the hurricane, yeah. That he's like Robert De Niro sitting in his basement talking to pretend guests, pretending he's Johnny Carson. Like, he thinks in his mind, he thought he was going to show the map, and everyone was going to be like, oh, yeah, oh, I guess Trump was right. They were going to see the black circle added onto the white cone and think that it was all real. They couldn't even go to fucking Kinko's and get one printed up.
That's the amazing thing, is that that went through his head, before he came out for that briefing, of just like, oh, I'll fix this. I'll fix this whole problem.
Yeah.
What does the panel think? Is weather political now? Is everything political?
Well, the craziest part about it, really, is if you think about when the president now says that this is what the truth is, how many pieces of the government go out to make sure that that's the case? That's what we're learning about. I mean, this is something that applies to all presidents beyond this president. Trump just says, all right, this is what the map should look like. And there are people who are like, okay, let's see if we can make that happen for you. That's important to think about, that could actually happen. And that's what we're learning, I think, from this whole weather thing. That's why it's such an interesting story.
Yeah, he's just stupid. And it's just, he should just shut the fuck up. Because the thing is, this is the thing, I forgot who, I'm bad with names in the government. But he works, I think he's with CNN. He's a little motherfucker. He was in the back seat with him. Remember, they had a conversation. He was in the back seat. He was like this under Trump. And Trump was talking to him. I forgot his fucking name.
Oh, George Stephanopoulos?
There you go. The 80s, yeah. Then they went to the fucking White House, right? And he was talking too much shit. He was unveiling too much information. And then his fucking security guards was like, and you know what that's for? They were saying for you to shut the fuck up. And so he was like, why is this guy coughing? Why is he coughing? Remember, if this guy is sick, weak. Like, he got so fucking mad. They be trying to warn his ass, like, you giving up the codes. Shut the fuck up. And I feel like he needs to listen. Like, his cabinet be on the side. I could just imagine them. Because he just told somebody, like, go to Kinko's, get the fucking map. And he takes the shit out like a goddamn school report. He's just like, look, if you can see right here, Alabama, it's like, and I see the fucking Sharpie. And to your point, I love what he said, because he could be like, Florida, it's in the shape of a vagina. And everybody will start going and be like, push Florida. Make it look like the shape of a vagina. Because Trump just said that's what Florida looks like. Like, it's really scary the lengths that that his people have to go through to fucking make his shit true, like what you said.
And by the way, that they worked out that signal in advance. Trump was like, okay, if I start to say anything in this interview where I'm, because it was about like how he wanted to give his financial statement, and Stephanopoulos was like, are we going to see this financial statement? And Trump was like, okay, if I start to say that I am going to give out my financial statement, cough to remind me that I definitely am not going to do that.
Right.
And then the guy coughed, and then Trump lost his fucking mind.
Well, he's a germaphobe. That's a terrible secret signal.
Yeah.
I think it was Mulvaney who was, it's the same Mulvaney who was coughing.
Yeah, it was Mulvaney. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's scary to me is that you just sort of offhandedly mentioned that we have a pathological liar as president, Sal, and nobody really reacted because we all know that to be true.
Yeah.
And that is like the scariest, most fucked up thing is that when there's like real news happening, it's not just about a hurricane hitting a state that's not going to hit. I don't know who to believe. Like, honestly, this week, I'm like, I'm not sure if the Taliban's telling the truth or the president of the United States is telling the truth.
That's right.
I'm not sure if the Iranians are telling the truth or our president, because he lies about literally everything.
Yes, even the smallest things. And that's why the smallest things are the most instructive. Like when he lied about Tim Apple, when he accidentally called Tim Cook Tim Apple.
Yeah, but he said Cook real fast. You just
That's right. And then he claimed he had multiple explanations for that. So he just obviously he had a brain fart, everyone does. He said thank you, Tim Apple, when he was meeting with Tim Cook. And then at first he claimed to people that he said cook really fast, and all you heard from the fake news was Tim Apple, not Tim Cook Apple. And then he said, I combined as a convenient way to save time and words, Tim and Apple, to just colloquially refer to him as Tim Apple.
Right. In the same way I often call you Sal Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Yeah, that's just right. It's just easier than calling me Sal Gentile.
Just to go back to the Sharpie thing for a second, what's really fascinating about it is that Democrats are dealing with a kind of gaffy guy who says whatever he wants to say, Joe Biden, on their presidential cycle. And as you're dealing
with
that...
Who's about to die.
Well, and as you're dealing with that, they're like...
He's about to die. He was fucking bleeding out his eye. I said, goddamn. Goddamn. That can't be my fucking president. He can't. You remember he fucked up the story? He said, and then he died. He died. He died, and they're like, nigga, that's not what the fuck happened. Nobody died, all your shit. I'm sorry.
No. This is actually my exact point. You're embarrassed by that, right?
Yeah.
But Trump supporters, they love this Sharpie thing. Trump is selling Sharpies right now on his website.
What is the spend?
With a brand on them.
But
this
Sharpie
is the difference.
Is it like a MAGA Sharpie?
Yeah, it's a black Sharpie, and instead of it saying Sharpie, it has Donald Trump's signature in gold.
I don't think Sharpie took the opportunity, though. I don't think they responded at all, which I think is a wasted opportunity.
But that's a great point. What has Sharpie's Twitter account done?
I know. Remember when Tiki Torches denounced the Tiki Torch rally? Like, why didn't Sharpie make a bigger deal out of denouncing
that? We at Sharpie believe in meteorologists.
We believe in accurate weather forecasts.
I love how racist Trump is, because the Sharpie cannot write in black. No, no, no. It must write in gold. He cannot... Nothing can be in black. Wow, you gotta love him.
Well, the Sharpie's black. His name on the side of the Sharpie is gold.
Oh, the Sharpie's in black.
The Sharpie's black.
He's
the black
woke.
Sharpie.
Yeah. Wow. Even today, he referenced his wife. He said she has a son. He knows. He didn't do any of the work.
Very well.
She had a son. He's
very
getting
well.
Woke, guys.
Well, he also probably spends no time and pays no attention to the child. So. That's...
Oh no, he doesn't. That poor baby. Oh my God.
All right, I want to talk about some other news. John Bolton was fired by tweet yesterday. And this is kind of a confusing thing, I think, for liberals, because John Bolton is terrible, and I've hated John Bolton since Bush tried to nominate him the UN ambassador? Was that what Bush tried to nominate him for?
Mm-hmm.
Remember? Sounds about right. Should we be happy that Bolton is gone, or should we be more concerned that we have... an insane president who is on his getting ready to nominate his fourth national security advisor.
Well, as a first order matter, I definitely think we should be happy that John Bolton is no longer in any position of power whatsoever. The guy has, there's like in a whole list of countries he's openly said he wants to bomb. So definitely cool that he's not there anymore. And I think that's absolutely a good thing. Nobody should be afraid to celebrate that. It's also bad that he was there in the first place. So, and Trump, and also the fact that Trump hired him off of Fox News, and also the fact that he apparently contradicted whatever Trump, because like Trump at least sort of pretends, even though he doesn't want, he has no consistent worldview. Half the time he says he wants to be like a non-interventionist, where we shouldn't have been in the Middle East, even though he lied about having been against the Iraq War, and then half the time he endorses like actual war crimes, like torture and stuff like that, and like so, and calls himself the most militaristic person you've ever seen. So he has no consistent worldview. So it's bad that Bolton was hired in the first place, but it's undoubtedly, unquestionably a good thing that Bolton is gone. It's just terrifying to imagine who else Trump will hire next. Like, he'll just see one of those infomercials for those night vision goggles that air at like 4 in the morning and hire one of those guys like to be his next national security advisor.
What was he expecting when he hired John Bolton? Because Trump, I mean, he is anti-interventionist, interventionist Trump, but I don't get, like, he hired Bolton and Bolton acted like Bolton would be expected to act and Trump disagreed with him. Like, I don't know. He just had, like, a really good hit on Fox News and that's why he got hired?
Well, in interviews he said that, you know, Bolton gives him different perspectives than he's gets from other people, right? That Bolton is very hawkish, as we all know, different perspectives that you get. But what's interesting about this is that Trump has been able to kind of co-opt the conservative movement and the Republican Party in every area except for this area of foreign policy. He keeps running through these national security advisors because he can't really, his sort of worldview doesn't jive with theirs. Like a guy like Bolton would like to do things that are very interventionist, wants to bomb a lot of things, wants to show American power. Trump's not into it. He can't keep these guys around. I mean, and when he had before him, he had this guy McMaster, who was like a little bit less interested in using American power in that way. And then that guy also couldn't stick around. When it's interesting that a president who has been so powerful and competent in changing his part of politics to his will can't seem to do it with foreign policy as easily.
Well, what is the Republican Party? Are they? Is it a hawkish party or is it an anti-interventionist party?
They can't seem to decide.
I'm glad that his little Monopoly man looking ass is out. Because it was just like, you just, that fucking stash, just get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to bomb anything. Like, you get your fucking name wrong at Starbucks, he'll be like, I'll bomb you. Like, he just, bring out the nukes. He's ready to nuke. So it's also funny to me how they had this like little high school girl shit where he fucking texting Killamide like, that's not the fact. You know, he didn't fire me. I quit, bitch. Like, fuck him. You know, it was like some like Real Housewife shit. And then it was also wild too, like with McMaster, he hit him up like, hey, dog, I miss you. You know, like hit a McMaster because don't. It's like a fucking game of Survivor fucking working in that damn White House.
I spent the whole day yesterday trying to think of jokes regarding his mustache. And, like, it was just a whole day thing looking at Getty images of Bolton. And I was like, is his mustache like a cartoon bank robber? Like, what mm-hmm. is it exactly? And then this morning I had this thought of, oh, there was a secret meeting planned with the Taliban. Like, that was going to happen. And I had this thought of, we had been so distracted of, like, did he quit? Did he get fired? What is his mustache really like? Like, there was a secret meeting, and I don't think enough people were talking about it.
Yeah, meanwhile, the fucking Taliban is coming over.
Yeah.
Just going through TSA like, yeah, that's my bag right there. I'm going to see the fucking president. I'm going to fucking Camp David.
So let's talk about that. I wanted to bring that up. So today, obviously, is the 18th anniversary of the September 11th attacks.
Right, 9-11.
9-11.
Which led us into war with you know, Afghanistan, where the... where we continue to fight the Taliban. So does the panel agree that it was wrong to invite the Taliban to Camp David the week of 9/11? Would we be outraged if Obama was in his third term and was trying to make peace with the Taliban and invited them to Camp David?
I'd be outraged if it was Nixon, if it was Bush, if it was Obama, if it was whoever. It's just like, what? And then the fact that he said that shit on Twitter is such a power move that he was just like, yeah, I didn't tell nobody shit about it. Didn't nobody know shit. Ivanka, Melania, nobody. I just did what the fuck I wanted to do. Like, that's very dangerous. That's very dangerous.
You're talking about when he announced that the secret meeting is not happening?
Yeah. No, well, I didn't even know that it was going to happen. The fact that he just announced that it wasn't going to happen, nobody knew that it was going to happen. It was just kind of like, you're out here plotting these secret meetings with the Taliban? Like, it doesn't take, like, a fucking genius to know that you shouldn't fuck with them.
But also, as you pointed out before, nobody even knows the truth of the matter. Like, no one knows what was... Like, at the moment, at the
time... We gotta call the Taliban and fact check.
Yeah, yeah. We have to find out. Yeah, like
yeah. Call the Taliban. Text
like,
their ass. Yeah.
Did you have like a confirmation number with Delta or something like that? Like,
what was the record locator? We demand to see it.
I do. I like the idea of Trump just sitting at home, being like, I have to make people think of something different than the Sharpie thing. Like, what do I do? I'm gonna invite the Taliban on the week of 9/11. Yes. Like that's.
It is. It is also like I know we all play the constant game of if Obama did thing every single week. But I feel like this is the consummate example. Like this is the craziest example. Like imagine if Obama tweeted, I invited the Taliban over to Camp David and we're gonna like have a summit. Like
right. Obviously the right would have had a nuclear meltdown.
Yes, yes.
But I guess my question is, would the left have? If you know, because like I remember in 2008 when Obama and Hillary were running against each other and Obama was like saying he was willing to talk with Iran directly and Hillary was like, no, you can't do that. Like that whole idea of Obama being willing to talk to adversaries like kind of appealed to me. And it's weird as the like Kim Jong-un Trump relationship is and Trump constantly saying that he's getting these beautiful letters in the mail and I don't know what that means and he often calls them beautiful letters before they arrive or before
he carries
them
around everywhere he goes like yeah. He has press conferences where he's constantly got mail in his pockets like pulling out envelopes and showing people and he's like I'm not going to tell you what's in it but here it is
but
like
it's beautiful
yeah
so it's weird and I don't know if it's the right move but like I think people like meeting and talking with each other is a good thing.
Oh.
Maybe you could say the week of September 11th in Camp David is not the place nor the time, but I mean, if we're going to end this war, we got to talk with these guys, right?
Oh, I think fundamentally the number one priority or the priority here is to end the war. I mean, the war should be, and the Bush administration should have been supporting talks and negotiations to end the war. So I don't think the quibble is with negotiations. There have been these delicate negotiations going on for a year or whatever now. It's just that Trump, as usual, fucked it up. Like by out of nowhere tweeting that he had invited them to Camp David, which may or may not be true. If it was true, is a deeply inappropriate and offensive place to have them. Like, let the people... And apparently the reporting was that he wanted to put, like, the final touches on it. He wanted to be seen as the deal maker and have his Camp David moment where it's like they were getting close to an agreement, so Trump, who wasn't paying attention to whatever the fuck was going on, decided to intervene and at the last moment say, like, okay, now let's ink the deal here in like and have a big, like, flashy moment and win the Nobel Peace Prize or whatever he thought was going on in his mind. But in reality, there were delicate negotiations going on to somehow try to bring the conflict to an end. And the responsible thing to do would be to let those play out, as opposed to announcing on Twitter that you've invited the Taliban to Camp David just days before 9/11.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that's weird to me about it is that the reason he had that outburst on Twitter is because they killed one of our soldiers. But, like, we are at war. Like, we're killing them. Like, we've killed, like, there was some statistic, and I'm tipsy, and I'm not going to get it right, but that we've killed, like, 1,000 Taliban members in the last month. Like, that seemed like a weird straw that broke the camel's
back. Wait, what are you saying? That he should have had the meeting or not?
No, I'm just saying, like, you're at war with these evil people, and you're killing them, and they're killing us, and you're going to have a peace talk, and then you call it off because they killed somebody. I don't know.
I mean, a lot of this is about how complicated it is to figure out how to end this extremely long war in Afghanistan. What are you going to do?
You should have a ceasefire first.
I mean,
and then.
We went in there to try to stop the Taliban from being in charge. 18 years later, we're going to walk out and give the Taliban some power. So it's interesting to think about. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we're really actually dealing with, right? And so the machinations of Trump and the tweet and all the other stuff, what's really happening is that a lot of people in your government are out there negotiating with the Taliban every day to give them some kind of power at the end of this thing so American troops can leave. And if that's not something people want, that's different. I mean, Camp David or not, that's what's happening.
Right. All right. I want to change the subject a little bit and talk about vaping because despite all of this that was going on, tonight on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, which I watch every night, the number one story was vaping. So we've had six people have died recently due to vaping-related lung disease, with another 450 possible cases of lung illness reported. And I'm just curious if anybody has a handle on what the hell is going on with vapes. Because I think the reporting has been very confusing, because it's very unclear if people are having problems with like Juuls and tobacco-based vapes, or if it's the like bootleg vapes you can buy in New York City that have THC in them. What Trump has come out and said that the FDA is going to ban flavored e-cigarettes. It feels like all the legislation is about getting rid of flavored e-cigarettes, but is that actually the problem, or is it THC vapes? I don't know. Asking for a friend.
Based on Sharpiegate, we know how this is going to end. The Trump-branded vape. So that's going to be the only one you can buy.
Yeah.
That should be in the Trump store maybe by the end of the week, and then that'll solve all this problem.
I mean, if there's ever been demand for vaping, it's never been higher than during the Trump administration. Like, I mean, I know people who vape more now than they ever have before. Talking about THC vapes.
But can't we have like a... I just feel like we need a different term. Because to me, it is wildly different people, and it's a wildly different experience to be like... smoking a Juul, you know, walking down the street of New York City versus a THC vape. It's just a very different thing.
Like the,
and it's being lumped into the same thing. It's different chemicals, and maybe they're all bad. I don't know.
Yeah, like the Mos Eisley spaceport kind of like big thing with bubbles that pops out. And
that's just dangerous.
Clouds.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. Probably maybe that's not so safe.
Wait, what is that? I don't know what you're talking about.
Are you talking about hookah?
These guys are these big bubbly things, and they light up, and these huge clouds come out, and they're buying.
Wait, what? What the fuck have you seen?
Are you talking about pipes?
Look, I've been
giant
around.
Seem like a goddamn circus.
Listen,
like
guys,
you're thinking of Cirque du Soleil.
You got to get out of the New York bubble. The clouds are huge.
We're in our elite bubble.
You got to get out to the real America, like Tatooine.
There's reporters like me who are out in middle America who can tell you that the lights are crazy. No, it's basically like the vapes that you buy like in a gas station, like. Or whatever. That's you got to be worried
about. But I've heard some stories that all these people who are having lung disease are the ones, it's all THC. But then the reaction, we can't ban THC vapes because they're already illegal in like 45 states.
So
we're just going to ban flavored.
So vaping, when we talk about vaping, we're talking about the process of holding this little machine.
Correct.
And you blow it in and then you blow the shit out.
Okay, so it's the vitamin E that it's releasing a thing into your lungs, and it coats it with a mysterious thing that they can't figure out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes the lungs collapse or something, and then people have been dying from it. But it's only been 6 deaths, 200 people in the hospital. And if you consider that out of everyone in America, that's not that many people compared to like guns. You know what I'm saying? Like
right. Every tweet about this today, snapping from the audience is justified. Yes. Like every tweet I've seen about this vaping story is like we should ban guns and not vapes, which is obviously true.
But the thing is, I love how it's like you having a birthday cake smell in your mouth, fucking Hawaiian punch smoke. Get it out of here. You shot someone, it's okay. You have a right to bear arms. It's okay.
Well, we all know from our whole lives that anytime teens have fun, it must be banned. That's what
Hello, Footloose. Hello. Have you heard?
It was also so funny to me to hear Trump's explanation of what he thinks happens with vaping.
Right.
Like, he was like, you know, it's a thing that's happening with kids, and they're coming home, and they're telling their parents, Mom, I want a vape. Like, and that's exactly what he said. Like, he's imagining a scenario where, like, a 14-year-old is bursting through the door and be like, Mother, hello, I found about Juul today, and I would like to vape. And you can't stop me from vaping, Mother. Buy me a Juul. Like, that's...
In his defense, that sounds like some shit little white kids would be doing. Like, that's just some shit. I would never in my fucking life bust in the door. First of all, I'm going to get my fucking lip busted if I bust in the door. Because she'd be like, do you pay bills? What are you doing busted in the door? Yeah, I think that's some real shit. Like, they want, like, Mom, I want a vape. And she's like, Timmy, go to your room. He's like, bitch, I want a vape. That's how I think white people interact with their parents.
You're not wrong. That's how my 5-year-old interacts with me.
Your 5-year-old asked you for permission to vape, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Is your 5-year-old vape? Is
yes,
your 5-year-old Juul?
Permission for more cartoons.
Wait, is, your kid not, wait is your kid not vaping yet?
He's not yet. Not yet. No.
Oh my God, dude, you're falling behind.
Yeah, you gotta get her. What is he saying? You gotta get her some bubble shit. The fucking the big thing. You gotta get her all that shit.
If you don't get them on vaping now, they'll binge vape when they get to college.
You know. Yeah. He's on Go-Go Squeeze right now, which is a bit of a gateway drug. So he's gonna be all right. I just feel like there's two wildly different categories, and we need a different word for THC vapes, like
that's
weed
safe, right?
Just call them weed. No, it's not safe.
THC vaping isn't safe.
This is why I'm bringing it up.
Charlie, but you're very concerned about the THC vape.
Look, I want to know that the
for your friend.
The weird weed pen that my wife bought for me 4 years ago that I've used once a year for 4 years is safe.
That's he just wants to know if he's dying or not.
Spoken like a dad of two young kids, by the way. I get one day a year where I get to use my vape pen.
One Fish concert a year where I get my vape pen out of the safe and take it to the Fish concert, and I want to know if I'm okay.
On my birthday, my wife lets me rent a hotel room by myself where I'm allowed to vape
all night.
But from what I'm hearing is that it's THC vapes.
Well,
it depends
what type of THC you getting. Because, you know, I'm from L.A., South Central California,
sure.
Where the THC is pretty good, you know?
Well, because it's a recreational legal state now.
It's regulated.
Right, it's regulated.
Yeah, it's
That's why
that.
we need to legalize the drug and regulate
no,
the drug
Hundo.
So that
we
can make sure it's not random vitamin E additives
exactly.
being added to it.
You're not going to die. You're going to be okay.
I'm going to be
what I'm saying,
like
Charlie,
is
I got to connect.
I'm just saying.
That's what I'm saying.
From the research that I have done today is that a lot of the bad effects are from people that have had like bootleg drug dealer THC vapes. But the response from government, whether it's Cuomo or Trump, is to ban flavored e-cigarettes, which should be banned anyway because they appeal to children and children shouldn't be using nicotine.
And isn't it tobacco?
Yes.
Well, it's tobacco, nicotine. So that shit could kill you. THC is a plant.
If we
can't tobacco's also a plant.
No, fuck that plant. That plant give you fucking cancer.
If we can't solve this THC problem, 90% of your listeners will probably be in the hospital, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the six people that have died, that's tragic and terrible, but there was probably a mass shooting today where six people died. Well, I mean, we should have our priorities.
I mean, I think the thing is, like, look, it's like the dumbest thing, but it's like know where you get your drugs. You know what I mean? Like, know where you're getting this stuff. Maybe that guy selling out the back of his car. It's not, you know what I mean? Like, figure out where you're getting this stuff. And
well, how do you do that in New York State? How do you figure it out?
Well, you go to California.
Well, you go to, you come to Williamsburg to the vice offices.
Okay.
You knock and we'll take care of it. We have a nice long list for everybody who needs to know.
All right. I'm seeing Fish in December, so good to know. So I want to talk about the North Carolina special election, which happened last night. Republican Dan Bishop narrowly defeated Democrat Dan McCready in a special House election in a North Carolina district that Trump had carried by 12 points in 2016. So I feel like we've had a lot of this. I mean, the midterms were good, but in general, all these special elections since 2016, it's been like the Democrat almost won, and that's good news because Trump won by so much more in 2016, and we're supposed to be happy about it, but we keep losing. But I'm curious, what does the panel think? And I also want to point out that Dan Bishop, the guy that won, is the trans bathroom bill guy. He's the guy that like wrote the trans bathroom bill in North Carolina. So bad news that he won. But is it good that we're getting closer in super red districts?
No. I don't think we're doing enough. I genuinely think that Trump is going to win again. And I don't think we're doing enough to change things and getting people registered and making sure that districts aren't gerrymandered. And I am hopeful, but I just don't think we're doing enough to change the situation right now. Sorry to bring things down.
Well, no, but you're right. I mean, fundamentally, the system is fundamentally unfair and counter-majoritarian through gerrymandering, voter suppression, the Electoral College, and so forth. Even the Senate is counter-majoritarian. Like, so that all that stuff is true, and that's just the reality, and we have to try to fix that. But, on the other hand, the swing is encouraging. These special elections happened before the midterms, and there were these similar swings where Republicans won, but there was like a large swing toward the Democrats, and people are like, "Oh, it's unsatisfying that they won, but then Democrats did take back the House." They had to do it by winning a historic margin. Like, you know, they have to win way more. I don't forget exactly what it was because I've had two beers, but it was something like not plus the Democrats had to win by like 10 percentage points or something just to like recapture the House or something like that. So so it's fundamentally unfair system, as you point out. But no matter what, we have to accept that the election's going to be on a razor's edge. Unless there's some cataclysmic economic failure, like a recession or something like that, it's going to be a razor's edge election. Like, even if Trump loses, he's going to lose. It's going to be close. Like, so...
But what if it comes out before the election that he had affairs with multiple porn stars and paid off newspapers to not report on it? That could tip it, right?
You're getting so close to cracking the case. actually, investigators were talking to Cohen today. That's like a new thing.
The Democrats are going to actually pursue Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal as a story, which I think they should.
I mean, he broke the law, so you know, the president of the United States broke the law, and prosecutors said in an official indictment document that he broke the law. So
what is he called? Person number one or something?
Individual number one. Cohen dramatically in his testimony was like, took a big long time to be like, and I want to say here tonight that individual one was Mr. Donald J. Trump. Like, it was a big thing.
Like a big surprise.
Big old vape drag after that, just like, drop the vape.
Yeah.
The person who held the Sharpie was Donald Trump. We all knew. All right, let's talk about 2020 a little bit. So we have a debate tomorrow night, the third Democratic 2020 debate, and the field has been narrowed down to only 10 people for this one, so we're just going to have one night, 3 hours, and it's going to be the first time that... I'm going to watch all 3 hours. It's the first time that Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden will share the stage, so I'm curious what everyone's prediction is tomorrow night. Are those two going to go at it? Is Biden going to just like give up every time the red light comes on? His performance has been pretty weak, I think. So it'll be interesting to, and hers has been great. So I'm curious to see how they contrast tomorrow night.
So the Biden team does this interesting thing where before debates they say what Biden's going to do, and in this time they have, I guess we use in the media parlance, telegraphed the idea that Biden's going to go after Warren for not for like her past business dealings. He's going to go after people. He's ready for like a big fight in this debate. He thinks he's going to get like attacked by all sides, and he's like ready to go. And for some reason, has sort of told everybody what he's going to say and do. But interestingly, today I think the most interesting news from this is that Andrew Yang, the businessman,
he's going to do something crazy.
Math guy has said he's going to do something no one's ever done on a debate stage ever tomorrow night.
What the fuck is that going to be?
And then he's going to do the whip and the nay-nay. That's what the fuck he's going to do. Hopefully he wears a fucking tie. I don't know why he thinks he's fucking sexy not wearing a tie. He just did a, what's this shit when they hold you across? Like, he just surfed. The fucking, he crowd surfed and shit. Mm-hmm. And so I know people probably were like, who the fuck is this? But let's not drop him. Like, no one knows who the fuck you are. He's out there doing a cha-cha. It's like, to the left, to the left. What's your fucking policy? Out here talking about giving everybody $1,000. No, the fuck you not. And if you become president and I don't get my $1,000, oh, goddamn, it's going to be some consequences and repercussions.
I think he's going to make both his eyes bloody, just like competition for Biden.
Wait, what happened with
Biden?
Oh,
my God. If you saw two bloody, like little giants, intimidation.
Did Biden really bleed out of his eyes? I don't know.
Yes, it was in the corner and the shit started going black. It was on some Naring shit. It was like fucked up.
His whole eye was like falling.
It was like bloody. I was like, he's about to die. I told him at work, I said, I'm not making no more jokes about him because it's elder abuse and it's fucked up. I'm not doing that shit no more. Stop. Don't ask me. I don't have no joke.
That's really kind of you. That's
he is. He's too. He don't remember nothing. I'm like, he about to start talking about, yes, and just yesterday, R&B singer Aaliyah just died. Like, he's about to just, he's losing his shit. He's losing his shit. I'm telling you. He probably think Whitney's still alive. I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about. I went to Joe 30330, and it was great.
Is that a website or a phone number?
It's both. It's both. You call up a phone number and a website, and the website answers, and you can donate through the phone to the website.
All right, so
you
Joe
dial Biden. Joe 30330.
So what's funny about this is that, like, I mean, everybody's sort of dunking on Joe Biden in ways that are like pretty obvious that you can do. And yet somehow he is still really atop these polls. I mean, all summer long, people have been doing this.
He had a hot girl summer. Truly. He truly did. Right. Do you know what that sentiment means, Charlie?
I do, yes.
Hot girl summer. Do you know who created it?
A VSCO girl, maybe?
What the fuck?
VSCO girl?
What did you say?
Megan Thee Stallion. All listeners, listen right now, because I know they white. Go right now and download Megan Thee Stallion. She's a beautiful black woman. She's called a stallion because she's tall, like a horse. And in the South, they be like, oh, you a stallion, like when you're really tall. And it's hot girl summer.
That's not political, but
it is important.
Well, Evan, you bring up that Biden had a hot girl summer, and Amy,
so even though there's like meme after meme after meme after meme of him kind of sounding old and a little off and not totally plugged in, he's still the man walking on that debate stage. So he's the guy.
So ABC News Washington Post poll came out, I think, yesterday or today. And in a head-to-head against Trump, Biden was up 16, Sanders was up 12, Warren was up 11, and Harris was up 10. And Trump will remind you that Hillary was up 10 this time, you know, in 2015 or whatever. But Biden does seem to continue to be the top of the polls. And I also know in, like, the likability or the favorability ratings with Warren, there was, like, a cumulative like 20-25% of people who either didn't know who she was or didn't know enough about her to give an opinion. So I feel like she's got room to grow because people don't know her yet, weirdly. But is Biden ahead just because everybody knows who he is?
Or is there something about him? He was with Obama. That's all my family. Like, my mom's Mexican. My family's immigrants. I had to educate their ass. I'm like, no, we cannot vote for him. And they're like, but mija, he was with Obama. We love Obama. Look at him. He's here in our house. Like, that's the thing. Like, most people know him. They don't even know what the fuck he's running on. But it's like, you was with Obama, and that's my dog, and I miss him. So I'm fucking with you. You know, although Warren, I really like her because did you see when she was talking about climate change? She really breaks that shit down to like two actionable things. Like everybody's just like, plastic straws, get rid of them. And she's just like, look, fuck the straws, fuck this. But like, these are two tangible things that we need to do. I feel like she's like, gives like actionable like things that we can do as a people to solve things versus it just being like a lot of hoopla and charismatic. And then at the end of the day, I don't know what the fuck you stand on.
She's amazing in that kind of setting in particular, where she was asked that question. She was like, oh, are you going to ban like straws or green or light bulbs or whatever the fuck? And then she was like, this is exactly what they want us to talk about. And then pivoting to her very specific actionable things that you can do. And similarly, like when she went in the, I think it was the last debate where like Delaney was kind of playing, they kept going to Delaney to play the foil of like stupid moderate.
Let's never talk of like, Delaney again.
Yeah, no. Let's never. Nobody even knows who John Delaney is. He's like a weirdly super jacked guy who has got like a lot of money and like is bald and is on the stage. And you think he might have wandered on by accident, but like he's there and he's polling at zero, but he's like somehow still there.
Somehow getting like 30% of the debate time.
Right, because he's the foil, because he's a moderate, because he's like a self-proclaimed moderate who's like, I want to get pragmatic things done. And Elizabeth Warren had that line, which was very well received, which I think is genuinely true, and I think excites the base, which is, I don't know why anybody would run for president talking about things we can't do. And that feels like the thesis statement of her candidacy, which is that let's be ambitious, because this is a time when it requires ambition. Because if nothing else, like you know, in some ways, Trump has shown us, like in bad ways, you can push past the outer limits that norms don't matter. So, like, let's be ambitious in that regard as well. Let's just say we can abolish the filibuster. Let's just do it. Let's get rid of it. And then with a 51 vote majority, we can pass all these ambitious agenda items. Like, let's just do that instead of restraining ourselves, because clearly Trump doesn't do it. So why would we restrain ourselves?
I mean, this is it. I mean, this is the basic argument of the Democratic primary. It is, did Democrats do one thing wrong in 2016, nominate Hillary Clinton, or they do many things wrong, which is like all the other stuff that they did, right? Joe Biden says they did one thing wrong, nominate Hillary Clinton. Make me the nominee, we'll run the exact same election as 2016, we'll win this time because she won't be the nominee. Other candidates like Warren, Biden, they're the ones who are saying...
Bernie, you mean.
They were, I'm sorry, Warren, Bernie, that there are many, many things wrong that Democrats have done, and they need to change their position on a lot of things and the way they talk about a lot of things. And right now, the one thing wrong appears to be beating the many things wrong when it comes to actual voters out in places like Iowa and New Hampshire.
So you did a piece for Vice News tonight where you went around to a number of different states, Colorado, Ohio, and you interviewed regular people, asking them the simple question of, you know, is America going in the right direction? Is America getting better?
Right.
And tell us what the response was from the people that you that came up to your table and answered that question. And I'm curious if it surprised you at all.
Well, it's really fascinating, actually. Like, if you ask this question of white Americans, for the most part, they say, think about themselves and how the economy is going and how they're doing in that. So we had some people say, look, the economy is not working out for me, so I'm not happy with things. Some people say, oh, the economy's good, so I'm happy. People who are not white are like, this is like the worst the country's ever been. Like, this is terrifying. Yeah. So, but those two sides, I mean, it's not universal. There are people who said, you know, people on all sides said the same kinds of things. But for the most part, that was a divide. And it was quite fascinating because, honestly, like, what are you supposed to say to that when you have a situation where people who are not white are talking so earnestly about how scared they are, about how worried they are for their children. One woman says to me, I regret having them because I didn't believe the country would be this way when my kids were the age they are now. And then some other person sits down and says, well, I don't know, my job seems to be going pretty well, so I mean, I feel good.
I think that's called privilege.
But it's setting up for a very interesting general election is what it is. And so the main thing that surprised me about it is that, look, most elections are arguments about how best to get to a better future that everyone agrees is possible. And right now, not everyone agrees a better future is possible. And I just don't know what that means when it comes to this election, primary-wise or general or anything else.
I also think, too, that it's like the way that the Democrats like keep trying to like go against Trump in these elections, like these debates. I'm like, fucking talk about your policy. And also too, like, you're not gonna win over Trump supporters by calling him racist. That's like calling a snail slow. Like, everybody fucking knows that. If you lean in and if you get Trump supporters to believe that he's not American, like what he did was un-American, fucking with Russia and fandangling and doing all that shit. Like, he said he was gonna bring back coal. Where the fuck is the coal? He says, you know, like, I think, like, if it, like, I just feel like sometimes, like, these debates get into an all-out, like, let's impeach Trump. And I'm like, I really would love to know, like, what you stand on. And that's not how you're going to win over the election. Because what really, like, educated me when he won, because I knew he was going to win. But once he won and I learned about the Electoral College, I was like, oh, so you don't even need to win all of the states. You just need these, like, six bad bitches. All you need is these bitches, and that's it. All the rest of us are side bitches. Like, I'm like, so why the fuck am I, and that's the thing, why the fuck am I voting? I'm still gonna vote. But that's what I thought once I voted that night. I'm like, what's the point of me fucking voting? Like, why?
But to the point you mentioned about, like, this, you know, this sort of somewhat binary choice between, like, oh, there was one thing wrong, and so let's just rerun the 2016 election, and we probably win, versus many things wrong. Whether it's right in the merits or whether it's right politically or whether it's both, I think there's a lot of people who there's a very strong appeal to the argument of not just we can't just beat Trump. We have to, specifically when you're talking about non-white people who are terrified, marginalized groups who are terrified right now, who are genuinely threatened in by this administration, there's a strong appeal to the idea that we can't just defeat Trump. We have to destroy the core of Trumpism, the very heart of it. And
you got to go to the center of the Death Star.
Yes,
and deliver.
You have to.
And phasers and right
exactly.
To the
and the Death
the
Star
right in their face.
That's right. That's right. But the core of Trumpism exists. Yes, that's right. The bubbles. Yeah. But the core of Trumpism exists beyond Trump. It's at the heart of the Republican Party and the conservative movement now.
It's so at it's the not, heart of America.
Yes.
Like, everybody's racist. Like, that's what is wild to me. It's just kind of like, they're like, these Trump supporters, they've been fucking existing. They just wear hats now. Like, we've been, like, I love Seth when Amber Ruffin, she was like, join the fun, white people. Like, we have been dealing with this shit forever. And it is wild. Just for me, it's just kind of like, I know if a white person gets in office, they gonna be racist. That's fine. but just be racist. Just don't want to kill me. You see what I'm saying? Like, you can be like, because what if he was racist, right? That's fine. Just don't hit me.
Yeah, sure.
Just don't hit me. You see what I'm saying? Any of y'all in here, be racist. Be you. Do your thing. But don't call me a nigger. Don't hit me. And don't, that's what I'm saying. Be right, do you, I'm not trying to change the whole fucking world. You see what I'm saying? But it's just kind of like, your policies, like, don't need to, like, negatively affect me and my life. Like, literally, my life is on the line every fucking day. You know? That's all I'm saying.
So there, yeah, let's give it up.
Yes, be racist. I love, woo! Be racist! Woo!
So we talked about how the left is dealing with Trump. Let's talk about how the right is dealing with Trump, because I guess there might be a Republican primary. There are three Republican primary challengers with Joe Walsh and Mark Sanford joining Bill Weld this week and entering the race. And I'm curious if this is actually a real thing, because it hasn't really happened in our lifetime. I think I was like 1 year old when Ted Kennedy ran against Jimmy Carter. I don't know, maybe Pat Buchanan ran against George Bush or something. I don't know. I mean, it's a new thing to me, having a sitting president have a primary. And there have already been a few states, Arizona, Kansas, Nevada, and South Carolina, are canceling their primaries. They're not even having one. But Business Insider is hosting a debate between these three candidates who are running against Trump.
It's 3 hours long. No, I'm kidding.
It's three people. But
Joe Biden is there.
With his bloody eye.
Andrew Yang is going to blow the door.
It's sponsored by Chick-fil-A.
Evan, what do you think? I mean, will this get traction? Mark Sanford is he obviously had his embarrassment on the Appalachian Trail, or the Tallahassee Trail, as Trump calls it. But is it a real thing? Are we going to be hearing from these guys?
I mean, look, anybody who reads a major newspaper op-ed page or watches the Sunday morning talk shows knows that there are plenty of Republicans and conservatives who don't like Trump, right?
Not plenty.
Well,
I mean, there's
some,
columnists and pundits
that,
who do,
well,
right?
That,
you can make a living,
in
right?
In that environment, you can find, you know, if the primary was held, you know, on those pages, maybe there might be something. It's not, there's no evidence at all that there's a groundswell for anyone to take on Trump on the Republican side. He's very popular in his own party. And these candidates like Joe Walsh, you know, I mean, Joe Walsh is a guy who's now having to start his campaign by apologizing for being a birther and for...
Well, why does he have to apologize that if he's running against Trump? Like,
that's what he thinks he has to do. And for all the other things he's... And now he's trying to say he's running it like, you know, trying to run as a guy who's for civility. You know, Mark Sanford...
But birtherism is the thing that rocketed Trump to political stardom, and that is so revealing about the conservative movement. It's because Trumpism is the true reflection of the modern conservative movement. That's the reality. The Never Trumpers don't exist beyond fucking op-ed pages.
Right, but Joe Walsh is not
CNN
choosing to run as like,
yeah,
better birther than Trump. He's saying, like, I'm against, like,
that
I'm
would
not
be
a birther,
if
right?
Somebody was
that
like,
would be amazing.
Yeah.
And then Mark Sanford went against Trump already once, right? After he got back into Congress after having to resign as governor because of the whole Appalachian Trail thing. And he crossed Trump, and then he lost his primary. So, and Bill Weld is a former governor of Massachusetts, you know? Like, I mean,
who's already run against Trump once before.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you about that. All I'm saying is, like, there are going to be a lot of Republicans who you see in the media, who you see on television, and who you read in op-ed pages, are going to be talking about opposition to him. But there's no evidence that the party that they are actually a part of is at all agrees with them at all, that there's any reason to oppose them in any way.
So is anybody besides me going to watch the Business Insider Republican primary
in your hotel room with your vape? Yeah.
It's going to be my big night.
Wow, man. These people are making some good points.
Yeah.
I hope the vitamin E isn't killing me.
I will watch Charlie because I have to for work. Oh, but if I didn't. Like, yeah.
I think Trump will be watching. I like the idea of Trump being really mad about this, and I just like his blood pressure to rise and then for him to die.
The thing is, he's so charismatic. Like, once he goes toe-to-toe, whoever he goes with, in, like, like some of them, like Bernie, he's so fucking emotional. Like Trump, it will like roast his ass and like will just like roast him. And then Bernie will just be like, what? Like he'll just fucking lose his shit. Oh my God. And fall like he fell in that fucking bathtub. Like he will just, he old too. And so
it does seem like Trump can kind of just look at Bernie and debate and be like, look at this guy.
Yeah.
Which is like there's Trump, not a lot of people Trump can do that to. And I like Bernie and I like Bernie's policies.
I fuck with Bernie. He's so old though. But the thing is like, I mean, truly anybody, I'll take Flavor Flav right now at this point. But Trump, even at his rallies, he's like, guys, what should it be? Make America great again or born in the USA? You decide, huh? Huh? Like, he's like a fuck, like, he be doing his type five up there. Like, he is truly a comedian. Like, I think that's the thing, too. Like, his supporters love that route up. They send her back, fuck her up, lock her up, grab her cooch. Like, they love that shit. And it's just.
And if they love that, just wait till they see Patrician. Former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld.
Yeah.
Everyone, we need to get out of here early. Beat the traffic. Beat the traffic will be his campaign motto.
Beat the traffic. Beat the traffic.
So who does the panel think has the charisma? I mean, I would debate that Trump has charisma. He's got something. I don't know. I was looking at his damn Twitter page today and his 9/11 never forget image with his fat ass looking at some empty field in Pennsylvania or whatever it was.
He loves talking about how he was there the day that it happened.
Let's be clear. Trump helped out a lot at Ground Zero. He was down there a lot. He gave a lot of money to charity. And he saw Muslims celebrating in New Jersey on that day. So he had a big day.
He said he would run into a mass shooting to save people. So
yeah, well, yeah, he would stop any mass shooting. But so no, I don't.
He can't run anywhere.
Obviously, none of us get the appeal. But who do you want to see? Forget about who you want to be president. Who do you think could take him down in a one-on-one debate? Which, by the way, I felt like Hillary took him down 3 times in a row, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, no, I mean, clearly Hillary beat him in every debate, but it didn't seem to matter, or it did. I mean, first of all, it did matter. She won the popular vote by 3
right,
million.
She got 3 million more votes.
We have a fundamentally unfair counter-majoritarian system where we reward the fucking loser for some reason. But it doesn't... So, you know, I don't know. I mean, you raise a good point, which is, like, somebody could kick his ass in 3 debates, and it might not matter.
Klobuchar could kill him.
With a comb.
With her nail. Klobuchar is a fucking killer. She doesn't play no games. She was talking to people in the snow. That's wild. She looked like The Shining in that motherfucker.
I think she's on stage tomorrow night, right? She's, like, number 9 or 10.
She's still in it?
I think she's going to be
is
in
Marianne
the top
still
yeah,
in?
Yeah, is Marianne
so
in there?
Marianne is
in, but not on
an
the
astral
stage.
Plane.
Marianne. She's
not on the stage.
I don't think she's on the stage.
Not.
She's going to be somewhere on the calm app, just chilling, meditating.
She'll be hovering
with a yoni
above.
Egg in her coochie. Yeah, she'll be fine.
All right, guys. I want to give it up for our panel. We're out of time. Let's give it up.
You, Charlie.
For ex-Mayo, Evan McMorris Santento. Centaur, Sal Gentile, and Anna Breton. I've had 2 beers. Thank you guys so much for coming out on a late Wednesday night. This has been a lot of fun. Let's give it up for my co-host, Cody Lundquist, who's in Los Angeles right now, listening to this tomorrow morning on her flight home to New York. We do the show every month here at the UCB Theater. We'll have another show next month, so subscribe to the podcast, and have a great night, and don't forget to vote in midterm elections. Good night, everybody.
Cody and Charlie and a few of their friends chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better when you 2 beers in.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.